Okay, well, 4 minutes late, but I asked for 45 minutes, and I think that's good because I probably don't have 45 minutes, but then that plan never works out. So, the title of the talk, actually, I'm just going to kind of delay and hang around because Niels wants to come back from the toilet. But, so.
Can you tell us more about yourself?
Tell me more. Myself, I have a cold. Which I got in Ireland. I was in Ireland. In Ireland, we're having a referendum on blasphemy. We have problems like public education crisis, health crisis, but we're having a referendum on blasphemy. And we have some candidates for the presidency who are winners of some TV show about venture capital startups or something. Yes. Getting over. This is the first time I ever make a ASCII doc and digraph, directed graph-based presentation, but you know, inspired by having seen so many beautifully wonderful colorless, almost colorless presentations. So, how do you run a GSM network with unreliable backhaul, maintaining as many local services as possible, availing during periods of backhaul outage? Well, I think everybody's pretty familiar with the Rhizomatica situation in the mountains and the unreliable Wi-Fi links that we've talked about in various presentations, and that's what we deal with. So how did Rhizomatica originally deal with that? I'm going to go back to the ancient past very briefly. Originally, the idea for the TIC network, which wasn't a TIC network at the time, but it is now, was just a self-contained network. We wasn't...
Increase
the size So it wasn't really a network. I mean, you know, it's kind of inaccurate to call them networks. They're really just one tower with mobiles connected, and our first experiment involved an ETIS USRP and OpenBTS and asterisk SIP PBX, which just turned the call around and sent it back to the BTS, and then we added VoIP calls just by adding another profile onto asterisk with calls out to a VoIP provider. The point of this was quite important is that we wanted to be able to have full autonomy in the site, and that was from a political point of view, as much as a technical point of view. It's not just that the equipment had to operate technically on its own, but rather we wanted to be able to not have to deal with problems with the communities where we were offering them something that maybe we weren't going to be able to sustain in the future, right? So if we said, you know, here's a BTS and a BSC, but you know, if we don't want to do this anymore or go out of business or just can't do it, well, this equipment you've bought from us is going to be useless. So at the very least, we were being honest and saying, look, here's the equipment. What you're going to be able to do with this is you're going to be able to use the existing mobile equipment that you have in the village, and you're going to be able to call each other. Everything else is a bonus. But that was what the product, if you like, which wasn't really a product, but that was the idea that was being sold originally. So we didn't, there was no way that we could have anything being dependent on the necessity of a connection to the community. In fact, I think that the connection to the community originally, when we got past the ETIS USRP and Range Networks donated us some equipment, was actually more to be able to do remote maintenance and remote monitoring of what was going on without having to drive up to the mountains. Actually, you know, at this point in history, I kind of disappeared and other people did this, but when I came back, I became very familiar with it. We changed to the Osmo stack. We replaced asterisk with FreeSwitch and created a FreeSwitch Python-based dial plan for this FreeSwitch with a Postgres SQL backend. So at this point, what we kind of did was we completely departed from GSM core network and moved the entire core network as such into SIP land. Or FreeSwitch land. So FreeSwitch, in our case, handles, and the Postgres database, handles commissioning, authorization, routing, billing, and it does this through our Rhizomatica RESTful API. We implemented Canal as a bridge between SMPP and the RAPI, and the LCR as the MNCC to SIP bridge for FreeSwitch. Right, and that's all controlled by this one, which was our front end thing for people to be able to commission subscribers and add balance and that kind of thing and look at their billing. So so by doing that, we moved, as I was saying, we moved everything into the Python. Everything happens there in the when FreeSwitch gets a call, it calls the handler function in the Python script, which from there everything goes. You get all of the information from the FreeSwitch session, the MSISDN, and all any other variables that are available to FreeSwitch are also available in Python, so you can pretty much do anything with it that you want. If you want to play back a message to people, as we do, we actually look at the balance when a call is established and say, okay, this user has enough money to pay for 3 minutes and 51 seconds, so at 3 minutes and 49 seconds, or whatever, 45 seconds, we will schedule to say, your balance is about to run out. And we can mix that audio in. Okay, so I don't want to go on too much about that because it's not really about fault tolerance or anything. This is what it looks like. I should make it bigger. Yeah, it's kind of complex. As Peter was saying yesterday, it's been hard to find people to work on this stuff. And I think that I don't have any formal education in computer science or anything like that. But I've played around with systems for many, many years. And I think that at this point, I'm only just really becoming comfortable with just about every component. And now I have to learn the split stack. But yeah, and there's all the other stuff. There's all the other kind of things like Puppet and this other stuff that we deal with. But so well, with the call flow, is that you would get an MNCC call set up to LCR, which sends a SIP invite to FreeSwitch, and FreeSwitch will consult RAPI to say, how do we know who this person is? They say, yes, we do. We're going to authorize their call. So FreeSwitch will send back an invite back to LCR, and you get a call set up back on the other side. When that hangs up, FreeSwitch will call its billing routine, which will tell the RAPI, this call was this long. Store all that in the Postgres database, and it's all controlled from the web-based Rhizomatic administration interface. Same thing kind of goes on for SMS messages across the SMPP into Canal, talking HTTP to RAPI. In the case that you have a call for another village, the FreeSwitch will route that to the other FreeSwitch other village, or in the case of a PSTN call, to the VoIP provider. And again, SMS intervillage happens by the RAPI talking to the other RAPI over HTTP, which then sends it back to the Canal. There was a little pointy thing here, wasn't there? Doesn't really matter. Use the mouse. Somebody had a laser pointery thing. Anyway, you get the idea. So how did we do inter-village communication, which I've just said, I suppose? Our numbering system has a 5-digit prefix, which is the postcode, followed by a PBX number in case we happen to have two PBXs in the same postcode, and then a 5-digit extension, which is the general 5-digit extension assigned by the NIPI. And this mapping from the first, the 68068 here in this case, would be mapped to an IP address. So when we get a call to a number like that, well, we want to know, where do we send it to? Well, we just send it to the IP address that is mapped to the first 5 digits of the extension with a SIP URL. The latest known user location is also stored in the same multi-master database, which I'm going to talk about later. So our FreeSwitch basically has three profiles. I've just written two here, but we have three SIP, SOFIA SIP profiles in FreeSwitch. The other one points at the VoIP provider. But one of them is facing the other villages, and the other one is facing the local LCR, talking to the MNC socket to the NIDB, we were using GSM full rate, and we were transcoding to G729 for the inter-village communication to use less bandwidth. Also use G729 to the VoIP providers because it's the best codec that they support. Our inter-village connectivity, there's a variety of internet connections available in Oaxaca, and in some cases in most of the part of the Sierra Norte is a one particular local Wi-Fi provider. There's also some places have got some kind of direct ISP, and other cases are run by other local providers. And we also have a VSAT installation that we're not using full time, but it's kind of there as a fallback. But it's something that has been one of the major holdups for rolling out, is not being able to get connectivity. And so we really are envisaging using an awful lot more VSAT in the future. So we use the Tink VPN, this Tink Mesh VPN, in switch mode in all of the villages. And this is over the internet. I have internet in quotes there because it's not really internet. It's more the Wi-Fi providers, non-public IP internet space between their gateway to the internet and all of their clients. So we don't actually really go out onto the internet there. Because all the villages are connected to this guy's infrastructure, it's not really internet. But it does have a lot of NAT boxes all over it, so we can't talk directly between our villages necessarily. But Tink is pretty good at that. It gets through as many levels of NAT as you want. I think the most that I've seen there is actually 3. And we could have worked with that provider to maybe punch holes in their different NAT boxes, open ports into our Tink daemons on the villages, and then they could use direct data connections. But most of the time, our traffic actually ends up going back to the provider's office. And then if that's not working for some reason, we actually end up sending our RTP streams to Texas and back, not for a local call in a village, but for an inter-village call. So this is kind of relevant to something else that I'm going to talk about in a moment, which is that Tink in switch mode acts quite nicely like an Ethernet switch, in that anything you broadcast onto it ends up everywhere, and anything you not broadcast doesn't end up everywhere. It's just exactly like an Ethernet switch. But the trade-off of that, of course, is that if you end up getting anything noisy on there, like our multi-master database looking for other nodes all the time, you can end up with actually quite a lot of ARP traffic and things like that. And Tink in router mode also supports multicast, which is also actually important for what's coming up. I haven't tried it. I have tried Tink in router mode, and it's quite nice because you can really have a lot more control over what you... You basically just don't get general ARP noise anymore. I'm kind of interested to see how that works out, but I didn't test it before making these slides. So roaming. Here's is how we hacked the idea of roaming into it, and it wasn't really roaming because all our networks are using the same country code and network code, so we're sort of the same network. We're not really roaming, but we called it roaming. And when one user goes to another village, and originally it wasn't really possible for somebody to travel that physical distance in the less than the time of a location update timeout, so we didn't really have the problem of that we didn't know where the phone was, because it was basically it was wherever the last location update request happened. And then so we had this that changed when the towers became more dense. So we maintained the details of the user equipment location in a multi-master database, running a node on each system, and we used cron jobs to sync the content by polling the Osmo NITB, which doesn't work, of course, because there's no such thing as an uncamp, or there is an IMSI detach, but it doesn't happen when you just go out of range. So the Osmo NITB, as far as it's concerned, it tells you the IMSI is attached until it times out. So if you ask all of your Osmo NITBs who has the phone, lots of them will respond, and there isn't any. Well, there is a time, there is a There is a timestamp in there, isn't there? But we weren't using it. So we later changed that to react to the alert notification messages on the SMPP. What we did with roaming is, there was also a decision taken at the beginning to run most of the networks in that old NITB accept all mode, which was kind of kind of help people find out that the network was there in some way or other. So when phones attached to the network, we constantly had a cron job that's scanning the database looking for IMSIs that were known in our master HLR, and if we found it, we authorized it. Probably it only works if the IMSI can attach in the first place at accept all mode. And then we were kind of using the Osmo NITB HLR as a kind of a VLR, because we had our master HLR in our Postgres database, and when we see an IMSI that we know in our master HLR in the Osmo NITB HLR, we would say, okay, we're going to authorize this one, change its extension to the extension that we know that it has. And then at some point later on in the future, when it hasn't been around for a while, we expire it. So Rappi kind of handled all of that. And so we had this in our Postgres database, we have that HLR table, we have our local subscribers table, and we have this Osmo NITB kind of working as a VLR and the multi-master database. So I'm kind of one copy of that on everything. So here's something where it was just kind of a failure and still is a failure, is that how do we handle billing for roaming? So if a user is roaming and they need to call outside, the local system doesn't know anything about them. We don't have a local account for them. So what we do is we just send the call to their local system. And then their local system handles it as if they were calling from their local BTS. And so it's able to go through the dialing plan, the dial plan and the billing system as if they were at home. So that way the cost for their call gets deducted from their balance in their local database. But obviously if the home system is down at the time that they're from village A and they're in village B and they're trying to call outside to the US and the village A is down, they obviously can't do that because they not only need connectivity to the outside world, they also need connectivity to their home system. So if the power is out in their home system, they can't call to the PSTN, which is not exactly fault tolerant, and it's a bit of a hole in things, and I don't have a huge amount of ideas about how to deal with that, apart from maybe implement some kind of centralized billing cache, which we could do at our data center, where we see all the SIP traffic go through, and then somehow synchronize that later on with the local system. But blockchain. What? Buy Bitcoin and retire. Sell Bitcoin and retire. Okay, better. So, the multi-master databases. I inherited this and kind of struggled with it for a while, and then I realized, it doesn't work. So I tried various products, and I don't want to be, you know, I think there are a lot of them are FOSS projects. But pretty much all of these kind of NoSQL and self-replicating multi-master databases are all designed to run in data centers. They're not really designed to run it with nodes all over the mountains of Oaxaca and Brazil and whatever with links that come up and down. And they suffer from, you know, if you look at the, sit on your sofa and use SofaDB or whatever, and everything's great. I talked to a respected friend of mine one time about this, and they said, look, Silicon Valley products might have a nice website, but you know, doesn't mean it's going to do what it does on the tin when you scale it to several hundred nodes and they're all trying to talk to each other and you have an update here and it's going here and who knows which one's got it. And it's kind of said, it's just not going to scale. I don't really believe it. So I asked for another friend of ours to take a look at things, and he promised to put a bunch of VMs together and try all kinds of different of these various DB products that claim to work in multi-master mode and be completely tolerant of outages, and then he said he would do it, and then he didn't, and I kind of, you know, should have done it myself, but I got a little bit, I went for a walk in the forest, and the forest said, you know, some point your multi-master database is going to be stardust, so, you know, life is short, you go and spend some time with the people who love you. And I got a little bit disheartened with the multi-master databases, and I didn't do anything with it for a while. I kind of said, well, you know, they don't really work, and even if they do, I don't know, should I? But then, you know, proposal from Harold, which kind of brought it back up, and it was one of those things where it's like, why didn't I think of that? Which was just instead of trying to maintain state all the time and have multi-master databases all over the place that you're replicating so that you can't, every place constantly knows where each device is, why not just flood the network with a request for an MC location every time you want to do call routing, right? If it doesn't answer because it's not connected, well, then you can't send the call there anyway. So it's not really a problem. So this... Kind of talking about paging, I suppose. Yeah, you're paging across the Tink VPN. We would send a multicast request that will be, oh, you have to write this into the Osmo HLR. The Osmo HLR is going to listen for multicast packets. And if it gets one with an IMSI that it knows about, that's attached, it's going to respond and say, the last time I saw a periodic location update request or MC attach from this was this timestamp, and send back the timestamp.
So it's like paging, but one day.
Yeah. From the beginning? Of the question?
The last comment from Niels before the stream, you know?
So I asked, is it like paging? And then the conclusion is it's sort of, the principle is like paging, but it's not on the radio, but it's behind the HLRs to find out which HLR last saw the subscriber.
Okay, so what I said, and of course the other thing is that you can just have the free switch. I mean, you could just actually bridge the call to everywhere, but we can branch the call to all responders, and whoever has the phone will either pick up or not. But if somebody picks up, then the SIP proxy would cancel the other branches anyway. So it's not super important, you know, that the thing with the timestamp. If you had a few timestamps that are 30 seconds apart or something for some reason, you can just still send the call to both of them. So that should sort out. One big part is that we don't really actually need this multi-master database. But we still do need to have some kind of centralized HLR, because we need to know what all the MCs that we are dealing with. But it's a distributed database of known MCs that we have as clients, and it's not so time sensitive. We don't really need to know where they are at any particular time, and it's a new subscriber is added or removed. There's some delay why that propagates is quite acceptable. So we do something simple like the existing cron job, some master database, and we just poll it when we have connection, and presumably dispense with the Postgres SQL and put them directly into the new Osmo HLR. And then, of course, no more accept all mode, which I don't believe exists anyway anymore at all, does it?
It's not implemented at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at that. So that last slide, this one, is really the kind of whole part of what this talk was about. But it was very short, so I did a lot more things. All of that other stuff about the history, which hopefully might serve, thanks to Media CCC, for some other people that are setting up networks that want to know a little bit more about how Resumatica did it. This is going to be too big. I really was started fighting with the VisGraph graph is thing here to get this. because you guys are all familiar with how much bigger it gets when you add the split stack. But this is work in progress. We replaced Canl altogether by implementing an Esme right inside our RAPI using that Python SMPP lib that was mentioned earlier. The RAPI, of course, itself could use a complete full rewrite because it wasn't really written by a Python programmer, of which I am not either, but I'll give it a go. And the Osmo SIP connector is not really production ready. Thought I'd mention that because it was interesting that at Osmo DevCon, it's just a comment, that I kind of realized that, I think I asked the question at one point and I said, you know, how many of the Osmocom developers are ever running a network with the MNCC socket and the Osmo SIP connector? And everyone went, nobody. And then I said, at Rizomatic, we never do anything without the MNCC socket and the SIP connector and a SIP user agent. So that's the point, is that like our network is completely, the core network is completely operating in SIP land, whereas what you're working on is pretty much not. That's all the core network is, traditional core network. So, you know, this is the same as what was there before, you know, very well. The distributed GSM multicaster thing is a component that needs to be written. I don't know if it's what language it's going to be written in, if some obscure language that isn't written yet, or C or Python, or I had a go at looking at some things in Python. It seems pretty easy to implement. The other side, obviously, could be something directly in the HLR. It could be something talking GSUP to the HLR, I suppose. I don't think there's anything strange there. That, of course, if there is, there can be questions. Oh, maybe I'm going to get to 45 minutes after all. The future. It's blank. Oops. No, it's not. It's not blank. So, as you can see, I was still editing my slides a half an hour ago. So, some of the things that we have in the split stack that I just wanted to sort of mention that are things that we've wanted, and the reasons why we can't possibly stay with the NITB is load balancing handover, which is really good for those sites. Something we discussed before about the Sysmo BTS 2050 and the dual BTS system and load balancing on that, configurable USSD and everything else, including direct BTS to BTS local call local switch, which we talked about recently. So thank you to everybody for everything that you do, and for really helping me come along and understanding an awful lot of things over the last few years. That's not the end. I'll not say thank you at the end. What else can we do? If our towers become more dense, I was thinking it would be nice if we could actually get away from dependency on the local WISP providers for backhaul and do something ourselves. And if we did that, you know, some kind of star network where we might put some Wi-Fi equipment on a hilltop where we could reach other communities around there, and then we could maybe move to have a central BSC controlling more BTSs, or various BSCs, in which case inter-BSC handover might even become relevant. And certainly we would, there's no situation at all in our current network where you could possibly hand over an active call from one BTS to another, even though there are BTSs that can see each other, that have an overlapping coverage zone. Like even in New Yo, we don't have that. We do have overlapping BTS coverages, but if one was to move out of coverage into another one, the call will drop. So it essentially, what we're still looking at doing with the split stack is pretty much emulating the NITB and still operating the SIP-based core network, which is the only way that we found to get around the problems of the unreliable backhaul and the requirement for the autonomous local community that must be able to operate without having political or technical dependency on anybody or anything else. This is something that I have time to bring in, so I do it. for the VSAT links that we're thinking of, we're going to need a lot in the coming rollout, because we can't get any terrestrial internet into these places at all. We need Osmux for RTP, and of course, this was just talked about quite a lot, actually, at the end of the other talk. But it remains unclear exactly how this is going to get done. Maybe not. Maybe it's clear to some people. But how do we do that? Somehow or other, we need to implement Osmux signaling in this scenario. As FreeSwitch is our complete command and control center for handling all those kind of core network functions, but we don't want individual RTP streams between the village and the data center. We want that all in an Osmux stream. We need to figure out how to signal the FreeSwitch in the data center to tell it where to tell the VoIP provider to pick up its RTP stream, which is going to be the other. In this case, it's hypothetical media gateways that are encoding and decoding the Osmux stream. But somehow or other, the FreeSwitch 2 needs to tell the VoIP provider which port to use for the RTP audio stream from the media gateway. And then somehow or other, the media gateway in the it's not really fully clear to me how that works. So maybe this diagram is not correct, but something needs to happen there as well. Maybe not. I don't know. We can discuss that maybe in a moment. But these were some of the things that came up. This idea of this is a kind of idea of mine now. But it's maybe it's ill-conceived to having some kind of transparent mode in the media gateway, where when the MSC is talking MGCP to the media gateway, that it would figure out what it's going to tell to the Osmo SIP connector, which is basically telling the Osmo SIP connector what the port IP situation is on the data center side of things, so that it can communicate that information directly to the VoIP provider. But I don't know. There's this RFC 8108 thing, I think it is, which is multiple media streams in multiple RTP streams in STP, which could be a way to describe Osmux within STP. And I don't know if that works also for media. Is STP is the same in the media gateway control protocol as in SIP? I'm not sure. So I asked Pablo about actually signaling those ports within the Osmux stream itself, and he said that wasn't possible. And another thing that I discussed kind of briefly the other day was this kind of the idea that maybe what Rizomatic is doing with having the SIP-based core network is wrong altogether, and maybe we should kind of drop that and try to move to some sort of more traditional GSM core network and rethink everything. But there was something that I was thrown out there, was that idea that if it was possible to somehow fall back to a local MSC if the uplink was down. I mean, you would have an MSC in the central location, but you could somehow fall back. I don't know if it's possible, but these are just some ideas. So I threw them on the slide. Yeah. Okay. We have 5 minutes.
Can you just repeat quickly this? I forgot the name, but it's sort of disaggregated GSM integrator thing, something with GSM in the middle. What did that do? What was that going? What was that function again?
The disintegrated GSM reintegrator.
It's a different name, but it was on the top right of one of the slides.
You're talking about the DGSMDI.
Something with GSM in the middle, anyway. Go back a few slides and no. No.
Back four, more.
One forward.
Oh, the GSM
thing.
No, it's not here.
I think we're too far now. Kind of a big
I know the one you mean.
A big diagram.
Yes, yes, yes. The big diagram. Spent ages doing this. The distributed GSM multicaster.
Yeah, the disaggregated GSM integrator.
Yes. So so when a local system, you have a call set up coming from the radio side and BSC, MSC processing that. So the MSC is sending an MNCC call setup to Osmo SIP connector, turned into a SIP invite, which free switch gets, which then talks to RAPI and says, I have a new call. RAPI says, where am I going to send this call? So it's going to ask the distributed GSM multicaster, where is this phone? The distributed GSM multicaster is going to multicast onto the network and say, where are you? And then the Osmo HLR with Neil's patch in it is going to respond and say, I'm here. And then it's going to tell RAPI, which is going to tell FreeSwitch, which is going to form a SIP URI and bridge the call to the FreeSwitch in the other village.
Regarding the multicast checking, let's say, or like how do you get where a phone is located at some point? There's actually that's implemented already in IP access, so in the command interface, I think, in the control interface. For HLR, and actually you can find some examples on how is it used in Osmo GSM Tester, because actually we use that to verify that actually when we subscribe a subscriber, well, an MS, to the HLR, it's actually being registered. So we tell the modem to register, and then we wait for the HLR or, I don't know, the BSC or the MSC actually to see if it's registered or not. So that's already in there. There's also some Python code, actually, which can be used to get that, so you could just, in case you want to look at it, you can expand about that.
So I think what Pau is trying to say is that there is a function in the control interface at which your multicast receiver could talk to.
In the control interface of the HLR?
Yep.
Okay, good.
So, I mean, it's as easy, like, just a quick approach, just you have all of them, all the IPs, and then you just use this. Actually, there's Python code which actually can do that. So it's just calling a function and getting the result and parsing it. So it should be just a Python script.
Great. So I can integrate it into the Python-based RAPI.
I mean, then you can think, of course, if you want to actually have this kind of interface available over the network or not. So you may want to add some proxy locally to, I don't know, for security reasons or whatever. I don't know exactly what's the setup. So, but at least for first test,
I think it's a previous slide. So the HLR is centralized, or it's also distributed? It's also sitting in each village, or there's some sort of master HLR?
So in this plan, we would dispense with what we call the HLR in the Postgres database. And I think we would just keep all of our known IMSIs in the copy of the Osmo HLR, which is going to be on every village. We'll obviously keep a centralized version as well, to which we synchronize those somehow or other on a regular basis.
I guess the point is that this is not a multi-master database necessarily anymore. It's rather that sort of you queue inserts into the database until a link becomes available again or something like that. So a new subscriber gets enrolled in a village and the central database is currently not reachable. So this insert statement sort of is just queued, and once the link is there, it basically gets pushed to the master. So it's not really a multi-master database in that context, and that reduces the problem significantly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when a new subscriber is commissioned, you know, the operator, the person who's using the Rizomatica interface to add the new subscriber at the time, you know, I logged out. But we can tell them at that point, you know, whether it was successfully added to the centralized database or not. And if they get some error saying that, you know, there's no link, well, they'll know anyway, because they know in the community whether the internet's available or not. If it's not, they could tell the new subscriber, oh, by the way, if you go to the other village over there, your phone is not going to work until later or tomorrow or something. It's not It's not a big operational problem, I think.
More?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.